And so before you say, because I know you say that you've already heard my story, I'm the Holy Spirit should change the story around. It shouldn't always be the same story. So I really feel tonight I'd like to start when I came back. And right before then, because if there anybody's coming back, I want to tell you that there's a lot of us in here. First of all, I want to say thank you to Mike and thank you to the Motorcycle Club for having me. And I wore the toughest clothes I had. I thought, and then I saw, I probably didn't do that great of a job. But I was trying. I put on all black. I was trying. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous since I'm 21. I've been in this clubhouse since I'm 24. I grew up in this clubhouse. I grew up in a meeting in the back where I know Randy from, and I hadn't seen him in years and years and years, in a meeting called the 11 Step Group, and it just recently stopped running after 50 years, but it was in the back on a Thursday night. My sponsor was Myron, may God rest his soul. He's the locksmith of Broward County. And I grew up in this very room watching speakers just like you're doing right now. And I said to myself when I first got here, I can't believe that I got here. You know, I can't believe that I'm here. Like, what is a young, smart kid like me doing with these old farts here at the 12-step house? Because in my group, we had some of the oldest farts there were. We had Maury, may God rest his soul, he's on the Maury, and we had Ruth Rogers and a lot of the old time. And but I came and I stayed and I went to different meetings, and my sponsor, may God rest his soul, Myron, took me to all different meetings around Broward County and so, even some in Dade, and I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I want to tell you is that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is different than the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really fell in love with the fellowship, and I was definitely going to get to the program. I was really going to get to the program. And I kind of got stuck in the fellowship part. And I was taking guys around to meetings, and we were going to dances, and we were having a ball. And I had all the intentions in the world of getting to the program part. I was like, it was like right around the corner, I was getting to the program part. And I did an amazing first step. I totally admitted that I was a drug addict. I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic, but I knew it wasn't good for me to do drugs. And I believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. In some ways I did that. And I got around 5 years of sobriety in this clubhouse, and I started to get stark raving crazy. I started working on the outsides. I started taking a bunch of steroids, and I had a triple black Mustang Cobra that I would park in the handicap parking right outside there. Sonny never said anything yet on that. And I started to get full of myself. I became my own higher power, and I spent a lot of time with God, about 20 seconds in the morning and 20 seconds at night. And a lot of time with me. And I had this God-sized hole that kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And one night, driving out of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Fort Lauderdale, the Fort Lauderdale men's group, I picked up a prostitute. Coming out of a meeting of AA. And I was arrested on federal highway, sober, physically sober, but not mentally sober. I had this God-sized hole, and I would try to fill it with everything that I could sober. You see, a lot of people have a lot of issues drinking. I have many more issues sober. Matter of fact, the problem with my sobriety is that I'm in it. And I had mental illness ever before I took my first drink. As a matter of fact, the first time I took my first drink, which is a Jewish table wine called Manischewitz. Doesn't look like a big Jewish type of crowd here tonight, so I'm going to just fast forward through that. But I had a drink called Manischewitz. And at that moment, that glass of wine at the table with my family, my alcoholism was actually cured for that nanosecond. I had been suffering from alcoholism for 12 years. I was 12 years old. And I hadn't had a drink. My alcoholism was so bad that I gave another kid a gun and I told him he could shoot at me as long as he didn't leave the playground. He could shoot at me, and I thought it was a great name of a great game, shoot at me, until I lost the game and I lost my right eye. And that was full-blown alcoholism, and I hadn't had a drink yet. I had full-blown alcoholism at 12 years old, and I had not had a drink yet. alcohol is a cure for what I have, alcoholism. The problem is I also have something called I want another drink, and that I don't, you don't know where that's going to go. But the moment I took that first drink, there was a peace and a comfort and an ease. I don't want to use the word comfort. That's a big word for a 15-year-old or 12-year-old. But there was the first time that the angst in my stomach stopped. I've had angst my entire I've had something called anxiety my whole life, and I didn't know the word was anxiety. I couldn't say to my parents, "Hey, mom and dad, I got anxiety." First of all, my dad was a Korean War hero, fought on Pork Chop Hill, and he would not have been big on me bringing up anxiety type of issue. If I came and said, "Yo, dad, I got some anxiety," I don't think that would have went over very well. But my dad, being a poor Jewish man from Manhattan, he didn't have the opportunity when he was a kid to go to doctors. So his family, they had like an amateur doctor set in the house. And my dad carried that tradition on, even though we were in Long Island, New York, and we weren't poor. My dad wasn't big on, and I think when Sonny and I came, we didn't just go to, you didn't have urgent care like for a toenail. You know, you did a lot of wrapping of gauze and a lot of tape and a lot of, you know, you didn't really go for a lot of stuff. So my dad had like a thing where, look, anything that was wrong, he had a liquor cabinet, and he would administer that specific liquor depending on the ailment we had. So if you had stomach ache or the runs, in my house that was blackberry brandy, and that cured the blackberry, that cured the runs, cured all. Before Pepto-Bismol, we had blackberry brandy in my house. If you had a sore throat or any type of cough situation, that was peppermint schnapps. If you had a cough or anything that was keeping you up at night, my dad had something called a hot toddy. I'm not sure what a hot toddy is, but I developed a lot of coughs and a lot of symptoms. And so as he was ministering to me a lot of these type of things, I would develop a lot of symptoms. You know, I had a lot of those symptoms, and I liked them. And every time I had one of those drinks, oh, and if you couldn't fall asleep, he had a whole super concoction for falling asleep. And I don't mean we would get wasted. I'm just talking about a little shot of something. And I think that was Jack Daniels. That seemed to be the sleep of cure. But when you're 12 or 13, I started to develop a lot of issues. And then I got my eye shot out, and then I spent a year outside of school trying to get my eye repaired. And that has its own issues. And I already felt less than or different. And then I returned back to the school as the kid that everyone would point at. "Hey, remember we told you don't play with guns because you could get your eye shot out? That's the kid," you know, so that didn't go that great. And then I found pot, and pot helped. Pot was a great helper for a while. And then other stuff. I'm a product of the 70s and 80s. And in New York, there was a lot of cocaine. And I want to thank some of the bikers for getting us good prices on that. Appreciate that. But when you're a waiter at a hotel, and you can't buy a lot of that stuff. It's not like if you're on waiter money in the 80s, you're not buying a lot of that stuff. And so I didn't have money to get like really deep in trouble. And then my uncle died. He was an internist down here in South Florida. He was a very famous doctor, and he died on the bottom of a swimming pool on the Intercoastal. And left me a bunch of money. And then I got, you know, deep into it. It was a time of New Jack City. It was a time of, you know, one time my grandfather said to me, we're Italians, and I came home and he says to me, "Stevie," I go, "Yes, Grandpa." And he says, he was reading the papers. Every day was in the papers. He says, "You see this stuff? If you smoke this stuff, if you try this stuff, you'll be instantly addicted." And I hadn't tried it yet. And I said, "That seems like terrible stuff, Grandpa." I said, "Could I see that news article? I want to make sure I won't never get hooked up in any of this kind of stuff." I went to Washington Heights in New York City. I'm like, "Has anybody seen this stuff?" And when you're like a half Jewish, half Italian kid with one eye, you shouldn't be hanging around in Washington Heights with a newspaper. So I got in some trouble over there. And then I ran out of money. You know, I don't know if this is your experience, but when you have money, it doesn't seem like a problem. It's a party. But then when you run out of money, then the party is now a problem. And I came home and I told my parents I was 21. I said, I have a problem with drugs. And they were shocked. They were really shocked. I got his honest truth because I was away at college. And they hadn't seen what was going on. They hadn't seen all the nights and making a fort underneath my steps and all the everybody graduated and I was still underneath the steps. And when I finally surfaced, everybody was gone. And I came home and my parents didn't know what to do with me. I should have been graduate. It was the middle of school year and I was just coming off a run. We didn't even know what a run was. We had never met anyone on a run. We had never met anyone that went to meetings. We had never met anyone that went to treatment. I was like cutting edge. I was like ahead of my time for my family. And they called up someone and they said there's a program in the middle of the United States for young people, and they sent me there. And that's where I met Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was for 21-year-olds, or 21 and under. And I was kind of a big 21-year-old, so I got thrown out of there pretty quickly. Because it was like younger 20. It was like Midwest 21-year-olds, like kids. And I was coming in from New York with all my five gold chains and my hair gel and my Cavarici jeans and my muscle pants that were basically pajamas for muscle builders. And I was like, yo, the kid is here, and they liked that act for a while in the Midwest, but then it gets old, real fast. They threw me out of there. And then I came down here to the 12-step house. How to get to 12-step house? I had a sponsor in Minneapolis that told me when you get down to the 12-step house, when you get down to Minnesota, my family invited me to come back and be a part of their lives. And my grandfather, JC, who I named JC Recovery Center after, JC House, he lived down here. And he said, come down here and give it a shot down here. But you better get into that AA. You better get into that A&A. And I said, I'm going to do that A&A when I get there. And when I landed, there was a hotline called Intergroup Hotline. And there was a woman behind the counter. Sonny remembers her. And Michael May was there. And her name was Diane. She's a big woman. She had a great attitude. Well, she had a great attitude that night. I'm not sure if she really had a great attitude. And she answered the phone, AA Hotline. And she was answering it right from the front desk. I said, I need a meeting. She says, where are you? I said, I'm at the airport. She said, come right over. We're right next to the airport. Come over. We have a meeting going on right now. My grandfather drove me here from the airport. They didn't believe I was coming into an AA meeting. They waited right outside in the parking lot because I had run a bunch of game on the family. And they didn't even believe I was sober. And they came and checked with the coffee bar while I was in the AA meeting. You see that my grandson is in there. He's like, he's in the back. And I met my sponsor. His name was Myron, I told you. And I met the 11-step group. And it was a great 5 years. Great three years. You know what happens? We stop being teachable. Some of us stop being teachable. So I'm not saying everybody. Me. I stopped being teachable. Everything you told me to do. You see, like when I told you to get in the car tonight, you want to say why? That's the way I was on my third year. My third year, I'm like, everything's why. My sponsor's like, Izzy, you need a clean ashtray. I'm like, I don't smoke. He's like, what is that part of the question? Why did you even bring that up? I just told you to clean the ashtrays. Why? I started doing the whys. When you start doing the whys, that means your self-will is creeped back into your life. My sponsor said, go over there to Fort Lauderdale, pick that guy up. I'm like, why? He doesn't have a ride? What, doesn't that have a car? That was the beginning of the end. And then alcoholism started to resurface again. And I didn't do 6 and 7 properly. 6 and 7 is the step that separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls. You know what 6 and 7 is? Being ready to have God remove your defects of character. Not you remove. I'm working on my defects. Good luck with that. Working on your defects of character. If crack and alcohol or heroin or fentanyl doesn't work, how do you think you're going to do with your defects of character? And I refused to work on my defects of character. First of all, I was like, look at me. What kind of defects would I have? Right? And I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And bigger. Because I was juicing. And that's a bad combination. Ego and steroids, that's a bad combination. And that's when Frankie saw me, had the fist fight here in the clubhouse, hit the guy with the chair, and Pompano Beach Book headbutted the guy. I had a great reputation, just great. Picking up prostitutes, just amazing guy of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything you would want to be. Grow up just like me. And I was working at the Fort Lauderdale Swap Shop. Remember, Mike? I was working at the Fort Lauderdale Swap Shop, and they had a circus there every day. And my wife was a featured artist in the circus before I married her. I saw her. She was from Colombia, and she worked riding the elephants. And I said, and Ricky and I used to work together. Ricky from the motorcycle club, he used to work there with me. And I said, man, if I can get that girl, I'd probably feel a lot better about myself. And I got that girl, and didn't work. Didn't work. You know why it didn't work? Because everywhere I went, I brought me with me. I had this God-sized hole, and I brought it into the relationship with her. I had this God-sized hole, I brought it to work. I had this God-sized hole, I brought it to the 12-step house. And finally, we were on our honeymoon in New Orleans, and I saw someone drinking fine wine in the table next to me, and I had never seen fine wine. I had never seen a fine wine presentation. A fine wine presentation, if you've never seen it, is very impressive. They pour wine in a decanter in the middle of the table, and no one drinks it. And even though I was 5 years sober, I knew that was very peculiar. And I said to the food server, I said, what are they doing? She said, they're drinking fine wine that needs to breathe first. And when she said that, I was like, bingo, that's what I need. I need to drink some fine wine that needs to breathe first. Because that's definitely not going to bring me back to crack. That's not even, that's its own animal. I had never tried that. I went from right from Mad Dog 2020 to crack. I miss fine wine. And it may sound funny, but I want to pause for a second. If you're in here tonight and you do not think you're powerless over alcohol, you will drink again. It'll take time, but you will drink again. There'll become a time at 2 o'clock in the night, in the morning, when the enemy will call you and you will answer the call and the drink will be there. I know in my heart of hearts, I don't like to admit it. I was a drug addict that came in Alcoholics Anonymous through the back door, and I'm powerless over alcohol. But I refuse to admit it. I never thought I'd go back to drugs. Never in a billion years. If you would have said to me, Steve, you ever going to go back to drugs? Never in a billion years. But I picked up my seven-year medallion in the back room back there, and I went out to try some controlled drinking, to get some fine wine. Randy knows what I'm talking about. The alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and patient, and has all the time in the world to trap you. You think you're so smart? You're not so smart. Sin has been happening since the beginning of time. There's nobody that beats alcohol. I don't care how tough you are. And alcohol, and it told me that I could drink fine wine that was $45 a glass. I remember during my relapse, I would walk into bars and I'd say to them, what's the most expensive vodka you have? Imagine this ego. What's the most expensive, because I had 7 years sobriety, you gained some money in 7 years of sobriety. So what's the most expensive vodka you have here? They said, oh, we got some stuff from Sweden. It's in the back shelf, all the way in the back. I can get the ladder, I'll get it open. It's $27 a shot. I go, that sounds like good vodka. I'd like to try that vodka. Two shots into that, I'm saying, what's the cheapest vodka you got here? What's the stuff that was a potato yesterday? I always saw myself as some high-end drunk, and I'm just a garden variety alcoholic. I always walk in there high-end, and I walk out just the same way as everybody else. You got to know who you are. You know, there's power in knowing who you are. I know who I am today, and I know what I'm not. I'm not someone that can play with alcohol. I don't take anything. I don't play around. I don't take stuff on the side. I'm not an and/or. I don't have stuff that affects me from the neck up in any way, shape, or form. I know I'll become addicted to anything. My grand sponsor, Dion, who's got 56 years of sobriety, at 48 years of sobriety, he went in to get his teeth fixed, and his wife, Sue, had the. He gave his pills to Sue, you know, run around Sue. He gave the pills to her, and he came back in, Sonny, and said, I need another pill. She said to him, you're not going to pull that shit again, Dion, at 48 years of sobriety. This thing is cunning, but this thing will wait for you to have a chink in the armor. And I lost it all. Triple back Mustang Cobra. I lost it all. Three-piece matching Gucci luggage. When I came back, I had a Winn-Dixie bag. And I walked over and I got dropped off from the Fort Lauderdale Hospital, psychiatric floor. And they dropped me off at the Liberty House on Federal Highway right before Anthony's was put there, right before Anthony's coal fire, right before they was there, I got there 25 years ago. And Richie saw me, the manager, and he goes, Stevie B, are you here to speak? And then he saw. He saw how I was. And I hope I never forget these words. He said to me, would you like a sandwich? Like I had been there before bringing the message. And they said, hey man, you need a sandwich? And I hope I never forget Tall Tom from the 11 Step Group coming into the Fort Lauderdale Hospital and me saying to him, hey Tom, do you have 80 cents so I can get a soda from the soda machine here at the Fort Lauderdale Hospital? I hope I never forget being walked on Las Olas Boulevard in my slippers with my gown on Las Olas Boulevard because the text took us out for a walk like one floor with a cuckoo's nest. And we're shuffling along. People are driving their Maseratis and their Lamborghinis, and then we're shuffling along looking in the windows. Oh, I wish I could have that. Wish I could have an ice cream. You know, I pray that we never forget where we came from. And you know why I always say yes to speaking at this group, no matter how many years? I'll tell you why. That man right there. And I didn't realize you know, I'm older now. I'm almost 60, and I came here when I was 24, and that man right there, when I came back when I was 34, he was really kind to me. His name's Sonny. And Ricky pointed me out. He said, he's the big cheese over here. But he didn't act like that in the meeting. He came over and welcomed me back. I had like 30 days. And for some reason, I know Sonny all the years, and we've seen each other in different places, and I know what he does for work or what he did before work, And Mike called me and asked me if I wanted to speak here tonight. And I said, sure, of course, because we know each other from church. We know each other for years. You know what I forgot? I called Mike back. I said, Mike, do you think that, I forgot something. I said, do you think the guy that was the big cheese there back years ago and he works for the FBI and all that, you think he'd be there? And he goes, I think so. He's my dad. I said, well, I'd love to speak there for you. I want you to know something. You never have to start again if you don't forget who you are. You never have to start again if you work the steps. You never have to start again if you keep God where he's supposed to be, on the throne. You can have a higher power. Listen, I have a higher power, okay? Her name is Sandra. She's home. She tells me exactly what to do. She's got me on the 13-pillow system at my house. I'm a one-pillow type of guy. My wife has me doing 13 pillows, 6 and 6 and one in the middle. That's my higher power. That's my wife. She tells me when I'm going to wake up, when I'm going to do things, where I'm going to walk the dog, where I'm going to take my son, what I have to do for baseball. I need to go over my wife's head if I'm going to stay clean and sober and have an amazing life. I need to go to the highest power. That's God. You want to stick with higher power? You stick. Listen, go. That's fine. I'm going all the way to the creator of the universe. When Bill W. said, this is the God of our forefathers, this is the God of the preachers. Who's a monitor that needs to be reset? Will. Will, that's his health stuff. Will's got a lot of health stuff going on. He's only had half his heart working. And he's dating a girl. He's engaged to a girl 30 years younger than him. So that's not a good diagnosis. It's not good. I don't think that was a good choice. But we're hoping for him. Hey, you know, this is what I want to leave you with. I had a lot of no's in the last 24 years. I've had a lot of disappointments in the last 24 years. I just want to just say, and I'm not putting Sonny on a pedestal, be nice to the newcomer. They never forget it. Carry the 12 step, yeah, do all the stuff where it's... But be nice to the newcomer. We were newcomers once. I'll never forget the kindness that man showed me. There was another man by the name of Dale, may God rest his soul, from Narcotics Anonymous. Big Dale. He died with 14 years clean. And he welcomed me into AA. And Sonny and a guy named Lenny welcomed me into AA back. They both were kind to me. Lenny at the NA meeting on Friday night here, and Sonny at the Monday night meeting. You'll never forget people's kindness when you're a newcomer. Because we were all there. If you get too big, shot for yourself, then you could be shot out. And I always remember that. I hope if you're a newcomer and you've come up to me that I've tried to be kind to you. And because if it wasn't for people like Sonny and Dale, may God rest his soul, and Lenny P from the Narcotics Anonymous and Paul E from Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, if it wasn't for those people welcoming me back, I had no esteem. Self-esteem, I had no esteem. I just relapsed. My wife left me, served me with a restraining order. I'm living with men I don't know in a halfway house. I had just owned a full house recently. Now I'm in a halfway house. I had a triple busting mice named Cobra. Now I got a bicycle and Winn-Dixie bags. And these men don't care. These men and women don't care what you do. They want nothing from you. And Sonny came over to me. I was with Ricky D. And Sonny goes, welcome back, kid. And I would never forget that. And I hope that comes across with the way that I am, because you're gonna do that for the next guy. You're doing that for the next guy. This whole thing is about the next guy. You know the person we lost this week? I don't care if you like his politics or not. It doesn't matter about politics. We lost a person. This is my personal story. This is not Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not out there with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or religion. We lost a warrior out there that was telling people about God.
Yes, we did.
Who cares what the politics is? If we're not concerned with carrying the 12 step, this thing never goes on. We have visitors up here from Key West tonight. They knew if they landed here, people were going to say, welcome, 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 welcome. Anywhere I go around the world, and I have had the blessing of speaking around the world. I was in Iceland last week. Chris travels all around the world. He spoke in Egypt and different places. Everywhere we go, the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for my friend Chris, Narcotics Anonymous, it's there for us. You never have to go through anything alone. I've never went through any death alone, and we lost our baby, our only baby. And Alcoholics Anonymous was there for us. I didn't see it coming. We had waited 5 years to get pregnant. We had been through in vitro fertilizations and doctors and medications and eggs donated from her family in Colombia. And we even hired a surrogate. It was a five-year process. We finally got pregnant, and we lost the baby. And I was wrecked. And a guy from the West Side Men's Group said, pray for the acceptance of God's will. God didn't cause your baby to die. But everything that happens down here is God's will. And if you try to fight that, then you're trying to fight page 417, where it says that anytime I find some person, place, or thing unacceptable to me, it's not so much as what needs to change in that person, place, or thing, but what needs to change in me. And that night, which was a Monday night, which is the same night as the Melrose Park Al-Anon meeting, my wife was in the Melrose Park. She just lost the baby. She was scheduled to go in for surgery the next day. She was at a meeting of Al-Anon that night at the Melrose Park meeting, and I was at the Christian Recovery Solutions right around the corner from here, bringing a meeting into their treatment center. And I was crying in the parking lot, and I had a bunch of guys around me. I had Doug M around me and Danny around me, and we were all in the parking lot, and everyone was holding me, and they were like, Stevie, it's going, we'll get through this. But I had a commitment that night. Even though I was in sadness, I learned from you people. I learned from Angry Don, I call him Angry Don. I apologize. That's not his name. I'm sorry. Let me just strike that from the record. His name is Don, and he married a beautiful woman that worked at the Floridian, and they had a beautiful marriage, and she got cancer. He's a member of Victory, and she got cancer and died. You guys remember, she was a beautiful blonde lady. I forgot her first name, but Don used to come here. And I saw Don come to meeting that night, and I learned that you can stay sober and bring your stuff to AA. We know another guy by the name of Mike Mechanic, that his wife was murdered and chopped up and put in a bag, in a luggage. And I saw him at a meeting. So I knew that I wasn't going to stay home and not come to meeting, and I went to that meeting that night. And guess what happened? There was a woman by the name of Jana. She's 17 years sober. She sponsors some of the women right over there. Jana, 17 years sober now. She saw us praying in the parking lot. She was in treatment. She looked out the window and saw a bunch of guys praying in the parking lot, and she saw a guy that was crying. That was me. And made an impression on her. She said she had never seen a bunch of guys that got vulnerable, and that guy brought a meeting into that meeting, and I cried in that meeting, and I stayed sober. My wife cried in her meeting, and she stayed sober. She stayed in Al-Anon. And the reason I tell you this story is not to be emotional. I want you to know you can get through anything. We get through all things together. That's why I want you to travel two by two. You don't go in the car by yourself. If you're traveling to AA by yourself, you're missing the point. You should be driving AA by yourself. unless it's an extreme circumstance. If you have a car, there's people that need a ride. If you're showing up at AA by yourself, you're missing the point. Unless you're on a serious schedule, like Jason just come all the way across town from the middle of a plantation. But if you're local and you know there's people in halfway houses and different things, then your sponsees don't have a ride, give them a ride. People gave me rides. And we lost that baby, but we kept staying, and we had a baby room built in the house. And this is the part of the story that you guys know that's the same part of the story, because this is my story. Now I've been traveling with the Lord. Now I know Mike from church. Now I'm really upset with God. God, I'm one of your guys, God. I'm one of your guys. The word says that you want us to be fruitful and multiply. Your word says that you want us, that we can have the desires of our heart if our desires of our heart lines up with yours, God. How is this happening to me? I'm sponsoring guys. I'm taking meetings in. I'm going to church. I know really good guys in AA. What, how's this happening to me? And then we get kicked out of the adoption agency. I'm at the Fort Lauderdale Swatch Shop. I'm working, and Joe from the adoption agency calls and says, a man like your husband can never adopt in the state of Florida. If you have to go, you'd probably go through that door. Yeah, that's it. No exit door. That's the now's you can't leave door right there. They saw the Bronx Tale and they're trying to get theirs back. I'm going to tell you right now. They didn't like that scene. Not Big Mike. Not let anybody leave. And we called up a woman, because a man in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's experts in AA. There's people that have been through what you've been through. You never have to go through anything alone. A man by the name of Happy Bob, may God rest his soul. He was a person that played music in all the different events that had, all the different events that did. Happy Bob, amazing. I forgot the name of the band, but it's the very famous band that we have here in AA. He played many years. He died. May God rest his soul. He was a famous attorney down here before he got caught with 2 kilos. And I called Happy Bob. I said, Happy Bob, do you have any connections in the adoption world? And he said, why don't you call this woman by the name of Mindy from Boca, a Jewish woman by the name of Mindy from Boca. And maybe she can come down and give you a home study, even though you're not allowed to adopt in the state of Florida. And that woman gave us a home study, and she approved us, and we had a beautiful baby, and we went to go see that baby. And we traveled all the way to the top of the United States, by California, by Canada. And we saw this little white baby. Because that's where they make those white babies up there. I'll tell you why I said that. Don't get upset. I'll tell you why I talked about the white baby. Because my wife's from Colombia and we're not white, right? She's not white. This is like a white baby. And our son's birth mom was holding up the baby. And she says, what do you want to name your son? And we say, Joshua. And she says, why Joshua? And we say, because Joshua 24:15 says, as for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord. Listen, never shirk from the truth of what God has done for you. Because she said, and she could have said to us, you know what, you're too religious or something like that. You know, we're not going through this. She did say to us, I'm not religious. She said, I'm not religious. And we said, all that means is your son is going to grow up in a godly home. And he has. We have honored that promise because of the 6 and 7 step. But I'm entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Were you there the last time I had to fist fight at the swap shop? Were you there?
No.
But Joe, that was part of our group here. There was a Joe that you guys had. Yeah. And Joe happened to be standing there with Ricky. And I was 6 months sober. And a guy walked up to the counter and he said something about my wife and punched me in my face. And I didn't raise my hands. That's a God's honest truth. Joe and Ricky could tell the truth. He punched me right in my face and I didn't raise my hands. It's not like I didn't want to. Not like I couldn't. God said, don't raise your hands. Let me handle this. Vengeance will be mine. Just take it easy. How many people I punch in the face? When I could be a federal face of theirs, it's not like I lost my face. And God did for me the last 24 years. Every single time I had a defect of character that popped up, the Holy Spirit inside me told me, listen, you need to ask him to remove that. Lust, forget about it. That's a daily, that's an hour to hour situation. anger, outward hour situation. I have lust and I only have one eye. I don't even know how you guys do it. You got double problems. And we took that little baby home, and there was people on the lawn from Alcoholics Anonymous with signs saying, "Welcome home, Joshua." And people from Alcoholics Anonymous took care of our dog. People from Alcoholics Anonymous, Rachel Schabel specifically, and Rob Schabel, Rachel Schabel taught us how to take care of the baby. We brought the baby here. We brought our son here. Within 2 weeks, he was in one of those little satchels, coming to meetings with me, speaking at events. My son had spoken many events by the time he was two, in a little satchel, like AA bonnet. And this is the last thing I want to tell you. Never take no for an answer. The state of Florida says I can't adopt in the state of Florida. God says yes, you can. There's people that are driving in the treatment centers right now. They have 5 DUIs. They should never drive again. They're the drivers of the treatment center. Sally, one of the people on the board here, she's a nurse. She had her nursing degree taken from her because she used to take one pill and give one to the patient and one back to her. The state of Texas told her you can never be a nurse. God said, yes, you can. We have seen miracles, right, Michael? We have seen miracles as a result of this program. We have seen people that could not make it, they're making it. People that could never sponsor, sponsoring. People that could never be parents, their parents. People that were the worst parents are now the great grandparents. They're doing a great job as grandparents. They've been given another time. You know, a lot of people in AA that were terrible parents, they're amazing grandparents. You know, a lot of people that were terrible parents in AA, they're raising other people's kids in AA. There's nothing that you cannot do with the help of God. You can limit yourself, but then you don't know the first 164 pages of the big book. The first 164 pages are very clear. This is all about your relationship with God. The reason that we named our group the Golden Text Group, because it says Henrietta, Bill W. is talking to Henrietta, said, "Henrietta, the Lord's been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to tell everyone about it." And that's exactly our platform. Kindness, one hand helping another, carrying the 12th step. If you're in your way of carrying the 12th step, you still need to go back to 6 and 7, which we always do. Humbly ask God to remove these shortcomings. You're all about you. Go back to the 7th step. You don't need to drink over it. If you're not able to receive correction, you need to go back to the 6 and 7. If someone tells you about yourself, if Lewis comes up to me and says, "Listen, Steve, I got to tell you something. You were full of ego that night." Thank you, brother. I will definitely take a look at that. The moment I get to, "Yeah, but," well, you don't understand. You know how much I do? Like you guys know I'm constantly late for meetings, right? Because I do like 27 meetings a week, right? Doesn't matter if you take 27 meetings. If you're going to be at a meeting, show up on time. People come up to me and say, "You know what? You need to show up on time." And I want to tell them, I do 27 meetings a week. You know what I tell them? Thank you. You know why I wore a collar shirt here today, even though I could have been killed for it? Because recently I was speaking at a place in Wisconsin or something, and it was an outdoor event, and it was young people in AA, and it was a rafting thing. It wasn't even an indoor meeting. And the person said to me, "Why don't you have a collared shirt on? This is Alcoholics Anonymous." I'm like, "You people are all in bikinis." He said, "But you're the speaker." And you know what I said? Thank you. If you're going to be this, I'm not saying this is the rule everywhere. I'm just saying this guy, you know, corrected me, and I just said thank you. I'm not saying it's the rule everywhere. But he said, "From now on, when you speak, wear a collar shirt." And I said, "Thank you." You know, because whether that's the rule or not, I'm a guy that doesn't want to fool any rules. I'm a guy that's always looking to cut the corners. I'm a guy that says, "Do you know who I am?" The moment I say, "Do you know who I am?" the enemy's ready to say, "Yeah, man, you're a guy that can take a drink. You know, like, these rules don't apply to you. You're a guy that can take one drink. You're a guy that can drink fine wine. You're a guy that can drink those $100 shots of scotch or whatever those things are. Kvasi. I've never had any of them. I've never had one other than that $27 shot of vodka. I've never had anything fine, because the moment I have one thing, I go right to whatever is still sitting on the bar. But when I start saying stuff, "I got this," there's a little enemy right next to me goes, "You know, you do got this, man. You're amazing. You know what? You can still, when you get to the 12-step house, why don't you park in the handicap spot? Because you're such a great speaker. And you know why? Your eyes definitely go in the same direction. Don't listen to anybody with their talent, because you got it all going on, Stevie B. And the moment that happens, I got to get on my knees and say to God, God, please keep me right-sized. It's only by the grace of God. If I have treated anybody wrongly tonight, I'm going to get on my knees. I'm going to do a 10th and 11th step. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking? Who do I owe amends? What could I have done better? And that's most days. Most days I fall short. Most days I owe people amends. And guess what? Let me tell you something. This is why I never let the sun go down on my anger in terms of amends. That doesn't mean I handle it all in the same day, because I've fallen short. But anybody I've ever wronged in Alcoholics Anonymous in the last 24 years, they have gotten an amends within 24 hours. You know why? I don't want any of that stuff building up in me. I got enough mental illness without bringing on new garbage. And that's why I really hadn't had to do, and I'm not saying because Peter Marinelli goes through the work every year and other people, maybe Sonny does, maybe Michael does. I have never had to do another fourth step. I'm not saying I don't need to. If someone says I should, then I will. But I carry the 10th step really close to my heart. I bet you there's nobody in here that I haven't made amends to that I needed to. And if it is, you'll let me know. You know, because I could wrong people without knowing. And then it's the last thing I want to leave you. There's people in AA that are going to settle for the croutons. You know what crouton people settle for? Did you see how much fun? These are like old timers, like music and fun. You heard them in the How It Works? They made the How It Works fun, right? They're having a ball. They absolutely insist on enjoying life. They own bikes. They travel in packs. They go and do things. They camp together. They have fun together. That's what this meeting is all about, having fun in sobriety together. Is it still called sobriety on Tuesday? This is what they pledge, to have fun together. You understand? Why I brought that up is because there's people that settle for croutons in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what they settle for? Being sober. You see them in meetings. They're like, how you hanging in there? They got those squinchy faces and how you doing? Hanging in there. They say stuff like SSDD, same shit, different day. And they're in the staying sober category. And then there's the people that have their life beyond their wildest dreams. They've decided to do everything, not perfectly, but follow the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Work the 12 steps. Carry the message. Take care of the newcomer. Bring the message, not the mess. And they're having a life, and it's attractive. And you want what they have, and I want what they have. And we keep coming back. So God bless you guys.